the conversation or the person actually doing the talking. I think that's generally where you got to kind of kibosh it. Anyway, we're live, everybody. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 138, bringing it to you every week, which is a lie because the last 2 weeks have been off because we've had a Christmas and New Year break, which I needed, to be honest with you. I was like really like, I wouldn't say a grinding, but it was a weekly kind of regime, non-stop, all the way through. We did about 47 shows, I think, last year, which is more or less every week without fail. And it was good to get a break, but I'm raring to go back because I've missed it. I've missed talking to you guys. I've missed talking to Adam. I've missed speaking to these amazing guests. Adam, you got to kill that man, whatever that was.
You've got a massive echo.
It's probably to do with two browsers or something that you have there, I reckon. Okay, well, that's the first thing we have to do is to check the sound. So everybody, can you hear me okay? And do you hear a massive echo, yes or no? I actually need to know this. So do let me know if the sound is okay, and do you hear me echoing and not Adam echoing by me? That would be good to know. Let me know in the comments there. So in Crowdcast, give me some chat there. We should be live on LinkedIn as well. So if you can hear me on LinkedIn, please let me know. Someone definitely has two browser tabs open. Adam, that's you, mate. Obviously. If you can hear me on LinkedIn, do give me a quick like or a comment. Let me know whether I'm live there. And we should be punching it live on Facebook as well, in which case, if you can hear me okay, give me a thumbs up. I think we're all flying through. By the way, as a lesson for everybody who is going to come on screen, which could be anybody in the crowd, by the way, it's the reason why we use Crowdcast, is if you have like two browsers on, that's what guaranteed horrendous feedback, because each side is picking up, each browser tab will be picking up the audio from the other, and it creates significant chaos. Let's get on with the show. Firstly, I need to announce our thank you to our sponsors this week. We have a new sponsor joining us this year. They've actually gone large. They've sponsored like the max amount to everything that any one company can do, which, by the way, isn't exclusive. I never sell anything like completely exclusive, but they're going to be here a lot this year. This is our friends, Join Talent. I don't know whether you know Join Talent at all, but they have been in the kind of boutique RPO hyperscale space in the last 18 months or so, ran by Katrina Hutchison O'Neill and Kevin Blair, two good friends of ours. They've been a rocket ship in this particular space, growing like crazy, picking up clients left, right, and center. Their arrow is definitely pointing northeast. Which you know, if ever they come in and sponsor Recruiting Brain Food. So if you have any kind of hiring needs at all this year and you're rapidly scaling, you can't hire recruiters, which of course you can't, and you want an out-of-the-box solution, you could do worse than check out Join Talent, jointalent.co.uk. Check them out. Let's get on with it. Welcome back to the show, Adam. Good to see you, man. We haven't actually spoken all the way through the Christmas and New Year period. So I hope you've had a good break and everything. You've got a nice new haircut and so on. So all that's positive, right? New you in 2022.
I needed a break of getting humiliated by you for a couple of weeks. Live on air.
Humiliate you. Mate, come on. You all know it's in jest, you know?
I slept more than 7 hours pretty much every night for about 2 weeks, which is incredible, until 2 weeks ago, 2 days ago, when it was time to go back to work. And my wife went back to work, like traveling away. So I had the kids.
Okay.
And it's gone from 7 hours to like 5.5 in the last couple of nights. So immediately undone all the good work.
That's a really tough thing, because I think people do need at least 7 to 8 hours. Like, that's a normal sleeping time. And anybody who compromises on that, it's a long-term, I think it's brain damage. Long-term, it's like a low-intensity brain damage if you keep that lack of sleep going up. So Madeline's saying the same. It's like
I'm obviously not a physician. However, there was a lot of suggestion that Margaret Thatcher's kind of, let's call it, change of leadership style was directly linked to her 4 hours a night she famously had. That was it. And her style completely changed over time. She stopped being able to answer questions properly.
Right. Yeah, I can totally believe it.
4 hours a night. She kind of boasted about it.
It's got to change your personality, hasn't it? Like when it's deliberately sleep deprived like that, you've got to be angrier. You've got to be probably more decisive, quote unquote, because you're less tolerant to divergent opinions, right? You just can't be bothered. Just pile through.
You can ask Sue Marks when she joins us, because Sue Marks works about 20 hours a day, I believe.
I know, and I know Sue's here, and I'm actually concerned because it's really early for Sue. So, I'm always conscious of people's time zone. I had an argument today with a friend of mine who asked me, "Hung, why do you never invite me onto the show? I'm a big fan of Brain Food Live. You never invite me on. You've invited all these kinds of people. Why aren't I involved?" And I said, "Listen, man, it's because you're in bloody Sydney, all right? You're in Australia. And even though you're volunteering to turn up at like 11:30 p.m. or something ridiculous, I personally won't ask you to do that because I think it's stupid. You know, you should go and enjoy your Friday evening, even if it's getting an early night. You shouldn't be tuning in to Brain Food Live on air." So I've got to go over there in order to make that happen. So anyway, I'm very conscious of time zones, which is why, unfortunately, a lot of the friends from the West Coast that aren't often here. And also, down under, it's tough to bring them on. So anyway, let's talk about this. Let's get to the newsletter first, Adam. Just review one. We don't need to go for the Christmas one. We did a bit of a forecast last week, didn't we, for the recruiting Brain Food. It was like, oh, here are the 2022 type things we need to care about. Any particular articles from last week that you thought was interesting?
Yeah, three specifically. The first one is a nice, quick, simple one. If hashtag hijacking is your sport, then you really need that Twitter global calendar of events that are happening. And, you know, it helps your recruitment marketers, perhaps, to plan ahead around what types of initiatives that they might want to put in place throughout the year to appeal to different types of, groups that you might want to hire.
I'm amazed that no one actually really clicked on that. I mean, I can see the click-through rate on it, but it wasn't a particularly popular post. But it's a really, really good calendar. It's like basically Twitter has published a 12-month multi-regional calendar, which tells you here are the main events that are happening in the world. And if you're interested in like talking topicality in any way, if that's your marketing strategy, you really do need to have some access to this rather than just like, oh, crap, the World Cup's happening. No, you need to have a plan already in place for this to occur. So make sure you click on that. If you're doing anything in terms of content publication, that link is really, really good. I've just shared it in the chat stream there. So make sure you avail yourself to it.
I mean, Twitter's interesting because I love it. And I think it's got quite a small but very loyal following. So, you know, the people that tend to be on there, they're on there every day. They're tweeting, you know, multiple times a day. But it's quite a small proportion of people that you might know that are actually on there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely the smallest sort of channel I've got. But I have to say I enjoy it probably more than most. I get a lot of decent news from there. You can curate the feed a lot easier because you can pick who to follow, for instance.
Yeah.
That's really powerful. And of course, it's a communication channel as well. You can talk to people. So I think it's got real big potential. I'm a big fan of it. I definitely want to do more on Brain Food on Twitter this year. So follow the channel, Hung Lee, at Hung Lee, get me to 10,000. I think I need to get to 10,000 before I'm able to do stuff. It's like weird. There's a
number blue tick.
No, it's not a blue tick. It's got nothing to do with that. It's to do with like, oh, you have extra access to things like communities and stuff like this. So if you can get me up to 10,000, I think I'll get there. I'm on about 9,000 right now. So follow the channel. Okay, give us another one, man.
So I enjoyed Visual Capitalist's list of their most popular infographics or visualizations from 2021.
Right, yeah.
Visual Capitalist is just such a great, I don't know if it's a business. It is a business, isn't it? Because they sell their images they create really easy to follow. They turn very complex things into really simple to understand visualizations. And certainly I've signed up for their newsletter from when I first heard about it through you probably 2 years ago. And you get a new visualization every day. You learn something new every single day. It's great Brain Food.
It is great Brain Food. It's also very easy to consume. I mean, the truth is, a lot of the data that's interesting is economic data, or it's like really dense. You can't, if you're presented with it in a spreadsheet, your eyes are glazed over. So what these guys have done very, very simply and very, very early is to understand you need to convert all those numbers into pictures, and they do that very well, I think.
It's brilliant for people like me. I can't read. For some reason I read very, very slowly. So something that just gives me the information I need really, really quickly is terrific. I noticed that the number one most popular visualization of last year was the entire world economy visualized in one graphic.
Yeah.
The striking thing to me was that, of course, the USA was the number one with, I think, $23 trillion. But China wasn't that far behind on 17. I mean, that is huge, you know? So I hadn't appreciated, I thought there was like a much bigger gulf between the USA and China in terms of the size of the economy, but there really isn't.
And then the sizing of economy has always been quite tricky to do in any case, because you can argue that it's a wider gap, and you can argue that it's a smaller gap based on what you count as actually, you know, economic activity. So, I mean, we in recruitment know this very well. You know, when we have recruitment agencies valued at ridiculous amounts based on the amount of cash flow that goes into the business, actually there's a lot of cash flow, but there's also cash out as well as the cash. That's part of the cash flow. Loads of economic calculations also have that type of dimension where, yes, there's economic productivity, but it might actually be punitive to a bunch of people that are costing. Like, for instance, healthcare in the US is actually calculated as part of the economy, right? It's a huge multi-billion dollar industry providing healthcare to the population of the United States. But if you ask anybody who's an American citizen, like what is happening when they have to pay an extra $2,000 a month, paying for their insurance premiums, that's actually wasted economic energy that they could have been spending on something else. They're not consuming it. It's just going into profit from somebody else who's probably got it offshore. So how we look at economics is really, it's a mess. It looks scientific, but really there's a lot of like political judgments. There's a lot of things that you can massage the figures very easily. It's way too arcane than it should be. But anyway, what we do know is that the relative share of the US economy has been declining ever since World War II, which is normal because the US had 50% of the world's GDP. Which is aberrant. Like, no country's ever had that. That's basically as a direct result of the destruction of that conflict.
Yeah. But the number two visualization on there was a little bit closer to home for us in recruitment, and it was the fastest growing jobs of the next decade. So really interesting to see that the fastest growing jobs of the next decade are not in things like technology. It's in human activities like personal care, healthcare at home, things like that. So like the complete opposite of technology, the things that will not be disrupted by technology actually, or will be much less likely to be disrupted by technology. So I guess the artificial intelligence specialists have just got to work faster on the next thing before they make themselves redundant every couple of months or whatever. That's the way that they've got to work. But that's a small number of people that are going to be doing that, isn't it?
And it'll be smaller and smaller because at some point the AI will do AI, so to speak. Do you remember like 5 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, 3 years ago, it was like very cool to, you know, teach girls how to code and all this type of stuff. And actually, when you think about where automation is going with software technology and the production of software technology, how artificial intelligence is either doing it or at least correcting it and all this type of stuff, you think it's probably not going to be a growth area over that 10-15 year period. It will also be disintermediated. Anything where there's human beings typing inputs via a keyboard, that's going to go, right? That's just like production of code. It's going to go. One thing that isn't going to go is healthcare and social care and all these things. And actually, those jobs are female dominant. They're also gendered. But they're very heavily female dominated. And there is an argument to say that actually women might be in better shape to be future proofed, if you like, because of their dominance in these spaces, whereas men may well be in a completely different type of situation. So really interesting speculative stuff. But if you just, you know, really see where the breadcrumbs are going, you can get to the destination pretty easily. Okay, give us one more, man.
Yeah, Glassdoor's workplace trends. Four of them, two of them very obvious, two of them a bit more interesting, probably. Very obvious, hiring is going to be hard in 2022, and that remote is going to give companies more access to talent. However, the other two were a little bit less obvious. So DE&I is going to be more action and accountability is going to be prioritized in DE&I. I remember last year asking a number of people whether their DE&I had accelerated or decelerated in 2021. And there was a complete mix, and some people had to confess that it had been deprioritized because they just needed to get jobs filled because of the turmoil. So interesting that that is a likely big trend for 2022. And then this concept of the workplace community beyond the company walls was another one that I know that you actually highlighted that in the newsletter as being of interest. And it's not what you might think around the workplace community being beyond the company walls, meaning they're working in different locations and they're working in shared offices and from home and from the beach and whatever. It's more so that more people are going to be part of communities which include people that do not work for the same company, but they will consider them part of their workplace. And, you know, we can see with the growth of communities like Recruiting Brain Food on Facebook that this is absolutely happening in front of our eyes. So really interesting, worthwhile taking a look at Glassdoor's workplace trends.
The first two were like cliche trends, weren't they? It's like, oh yeah, remote is here to stay. Yeah, guess what? We kind of know that. Well done on the forecast, Nostradamus. But the last two were really quite interesting because they were non-cliche. And that's actually something I'm going to ask the guests who are coming on today, by the way. I've asked them both to think about what is an unconventional non-cliched prediction that they have for this year. And I want them to bring this out. Don't tell me remote is here to stay. Don't tell me hiring is hard. We all know that. Let's have a digger deep, see what else is happening. And I also wanted to ask them what was the hyper-specific prediction. You know, this is when you're predicting how many points, Everton are going to actually accumulate over the course of a particular season with who is the top scorer. Name the person, name the goals. That's also what we're going to ask as well. Let's bring the guests on without further ado. But before I get to them, why don't I ask you the question, Adam? Those two questions, unconventional, non-cliché prediction for this year, and also a hyper-specific prediction. You got answers to those two?
Unconventional is not really me. The development of further automation within recruitment teams, getting rid of busy work. That's the big one. That's the main one. And I know that's a cliche, isn't it? What I've just said, but yeah, that's one. And the second one is, Workday buys Beamery on October the 23rd.
That's, you know what, I think I like that a lot.
October
the 23rd, 2022. All right, I like that a lot. I think so. There will be we're going to bring on people who know about this. And by the way, folks, but the guests who are listening now, there's obviously confidential stuff. Don't disclose this. But
I got that straight from George.
I was going to say, I see George there and it's like,
really
okay.
Kidding.
Don't like disclose anything, but let's talk about it. I think there will be like big acquisitions, obviously, every year. Yes. But on that CRM space, talent sort of nurturing space, I think big buyouts are going to happen. Okay, let's bring our friends on. There's George. Just bring him on anyway because we said we're going to do that. So George, Madeline, and I think Merv. Let's see if we can bring these guys on. Should get an invite right there. I do see Madeline as well. Let's bring on Madeline. And there's Mervyn as well. Wonderful name, Mervyn, you know. It's one of those oldie English names that unfortunately fallen out of favor. But I would love to see it make a comeback. I think we need more Mervs. You know,
there's going to be a lot of babies born this year called Mervyn after Mervyn's appearance here on Brainfood Live.
Do you reckon so? It's an aphrodisiacal effect on the UK. Oh, here's some of our friends right now. There's Madeline. Let's do some introductions. So, Madeline, great to see you. Welcome to the show. For the folks who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
Sure. Thanks for having me on. My name is Madeline Lorano. I'm the founder of a research company called Aptitude Research. We do research on HR technology, but mostly TA, mostly TA tech.
Fantastic. Madeline's also an artist as well, as you can see.
Not for me. My kids are not artists either. I just put them up. I needed something on that blank wall.
I think they look great. The contrast as well, the different sort of images that they have, different creativity. I think that's awesome.
It just means I can never wear a patterned shirt.
I need to have some kids now to improve my background. I mean, that's what I need to do. Okay, there's Mervyn. Let's say hi to him. Mervyn, who are you? What it is you do, sir?
Hi, I'm Mervyn. I'm an HR grifter. No, I mean I think the official thing is writer, researcher, analyst around HR, talent, work, tech trends. Basically, I write and research on partnering with HR and recruitment technology businesses. And do lots of other things as well.
Fantastic. Great to have you on the
show.
Oh,
And I'm also a co-author, and our next book, myself and Matt Alder, Digital Talent, is published on the 3rd of March, 2022 in the UK and Europe, and the 29th of March, 2022 in the US.
Mervyn nearly missed the contractual obligation, Ed. You see, it's like he's got it in his contract. Whenever he's on like any sort of channel, he needs to like plug his book. All right, buy his book. Buy the book. Okay.
Pre-order. Okay. Pre-order the book.
Pre-order it, in fact. Okay. Thanks a lot, Merv. George, great to see you, sir. Quickly, for the people who don't know you, who are you? What is you do?
I'm George LaRocque, and I'm the founder of WorkTech. I also do research and market analysis across all the categories in HR tech. I track all of the growth funding that's coming into the space and do advisory with employers and tech vendors of all sizes and stages.
Fantastic. And I think, you know, with those intros, folks, you know that we've got the leading experts, I would say, in the HR industry, sort of scoping on the landscape scale with regards to HR tech or work tech these days, I think is the cool way to talk about it. And that's one thing let's narrow down on straight away. 2022. 2021 was, I think, a record-breaking year for fundraising for our category of technology, wasn't it? Do you see that being broken in 2022, or are we kind of was that the big peak, the big push, or does it go even bigger than that? Any thoughts on this, Madeline? Let's go with you first.
Yeah, and I'm curious to hear what George thinks, because I know he studies this more than I do, but I think it's going to continue. I mean, I know a few deals that just haven't even been announced yet that will be announced in the next few weeks, hopefully. And I think this year we're going to see it continue. Beyond that, I don't know what happens. I also think we're going to see kind of the fallout from a lot of companies that have taken on a lot of investment this year or last year and have not been able to move forward with that.
What are your thoughts on that, George?
Yeah, I mean, we did $17.9 billion in 2021. And to put that in perspective, we did $33 billion in the last nine. So more than half of what was done in the last 9 years was raised or flooded into this space in 2021. So the pragmatist in me wants to say, we'll never do that again. This is crazy. But everything lining up in what's happening in the market, from all of the macro conditions, which we'll probably get into a little bit, I would guess, but along with the macro conditions, unemployment, strong predictions for the economy, I'm watching all of the VC and private equity funds build massive war chests of money over the last 12 months as well. And we're already just in the first couple weeks of 2022, pushing over $1 billion in money coming into the overall space. So unless there's some massive adjustment, and I'm not even sure that that would change things, I think we're in for another roller coaster ride of crazy investments and, yeah, mergers and acquisitions, of course.
Do you think that that means that HR tech firms are overvalued? Because there is so much money flooding in that it's almost become, you know, what used to be a 10 million raise is now 15. What used to be 15 is now 22. It just keeps going up and up, sucking this money in. Is it fundamentally overvalued? Thoughts on this? Open it out to anybody with an idea.
I think for some of them, it is overvalued. I think sometimes it makes sense, but I think, you know, if this continues, we have gone from, you know, the average deal size, George Wright being like 10 to 20, that was like a great round of investment, to now it's over 100. And sometimes it just doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, for some of these valuations are just crazy, right? When you look at multiples of revenue, we've seen some deals come out and it looks like multiples of 40-50x. It's just ridiculous. And some of these companies are not very capital efficient, and so they're raising tons of money and they're spending it as fast as they're raising it. So when Madeline talks about an adjustment with some of these vendors, those are the ones that those are the vendors that we'll have to watch for in the next year or two. Because it gets to a point where if the valuation is pushed so high, and then they become too big to acquire, and the only option they have is to go public. And if they're not, they don't have revenue and they're not efficient with their capital, going public doesn't look like a very good option. So those are the things to that we need to be careful. And especially, you know, this sounds like all financial market mumbo jumbo, but if you're buying HR technology for an enterprise, a global enterprise, these are the things you need to be evaluating your partners on that are scale-ups and startups. How are they with their capital? How are they, where are they on this spectrum of risk, and how comfortable are you with that? So it's something that, you know, back in the early 2000s, we as vendors, we got pushed a lot on our stability and our financial management. That sort of went out the window. We're in love with you know, big valuations and crazy rounds of funding. And I think there needs to be, and there will be, a renaissance back to you know, really digging in and evaluations on financials and what the future looks like from a stability perspective for these partners.
So,
George, do you see like a new breed of kind of zombie businesses in the next couple of years, from those companies that have gone and taken hundreds of millions of dollars and actually are never going to generate the revenue to be able to justify the kind of multiple that the investors would want?
Yeah, I don't know that's a new category, but I think there will be, you know, certainly the landscape is there for a lot more of them. I would say back before 2017, there were a lot of players like that where they were still out there. They were keeping the lights on. The staff was reduced. They just sort of, you know, drift off like zombies into the wilderness, never to be heard from again. It's a huge category, a huge market that we're in, but, this is just an incredible number of players have entered the space and are continuing to enter the space. And it's a really good thing. It's pushing innovation. It's pushing us all. It's wonderful. If you're not acquired and you're not able to get to serious traction scale, that might look like your future.
Go ahead, Madeline. Can I just add one thing too? I would say that, Adam, to your question about the zombie kind of providers, I think a lot of the acquisitions will end up being zombie acquisitions, where there's just a get me out of this situation acquisition. And then, yeah, I think people are over their heads, talk about, you know, stress of not sleeping, and they look to get acquired and nothing happens and they just die.
A quick one.
Actually, my concern, Mervin, can I speak? Mervin,
No, you can't, because I'm going to ask you directly a question, which I want you to answer.
I'll answer what I was about to say, not what you're
asking. It is about this. So how significant is it for HR people who are buying software to actually do the due diligence about the financial state of the vendor? We've got a few people in the chat stream there saying, yeah, of course you do this, but I just wonder, do they really? Or is it more a case of, you know, I like this new toy, I'm going to get it in, as opposed to, you know, going through forensically what the revenue of that provider is? Have you got any experience on that side of things when you're advising these companies, Merv?
Not particularly, no. But what I would say is that HR needs to focus on the user, not the vendor. And we are awash with all this money and everything, and yet candidate experience, employee experience has never been worse if you look at the research that comes out all the time. So we're investing in all of this, but it's not necessarily making the working lives of our people easier. I mean, everybody says the great resignation, that's the big thing at the moment, this great realignment, people moving jobs because they don't like the way you've treated them. And ultimately, this is what I suppose, chasing the next big shiny thing, and it's, oh, well, great, they've just been bought, they're going to be good. And ultimately, isn't improving the experience of the workforce. It's not necessarily improving productivity. It's not improving engagement. And ultimately, yeah, what HR needs to be concerned about is that side, the people.
I think is very valid. But I wonder, from a HR buyer's point of view, there's all kinds of like disalignment with, if you like, the needs of the business versus their personal agendas versus their own kind of sense of mission and so forth. Typically, when a senior person lands a big sort of head of TA job, they're going to try and make changes. One of the changes they would love to make is implement new tech. Whether that's the right thing or not for the business or not, that's besides that point. What I'm trying to say is that they're driven by other agendas, which is kind of normal part of how human beings behave, which is, you know, yeah, I want to revolutionize this, I want to change this. So
having said that, if you think of top football managers, they don't take over a new team and immediately make a marquee signing and blow their budget on one big name, because they know they've got to establish themselves first. They've got to find out exactly what they're trying to solve in the team and which players would be the most relevant and most important to help them move to where they want to go. So if you've taken over, if you went, and I've congratulated loads of people already in the last week, you've got new jobs in TA. But if you're going into a new big job, surely it's the challenge first before saying, you know, I'm going to make my mark by signing up to this tech or candidate ID. That's what I'm going to do, and I'll be judged by that. But I mean, I don't think that is how people approach it. And I think the conversations that we have around the tech is too obsessed with the tech and not how it's used and what it does.
No, I agree with that, Mervyn. So there's the aspirational and reality here, though. So what I want to talk about is what is actually going to happen when typically people come in. You mentioned that the manager is actually a really good segue, because I think it is absolutely true. Of course, all football managers, any new manager coming in, will have time to do an audit and figure out what's going on. But no, it never happens. First thing they do is get their own staff in. They fire the existing people. They don't do an analysis as to who's doing a good job there. Ship them all out. I'm getting my own crew in. And then it's a new change of sort of philosophy, good or bad. Like I say, I'm not trying to say that this is I'm not advocating for a particular way of doing it. I'm simply making an observation. It seems to be how it is done. In which case, what can we learn from all of that? I want to ask a quick question for the audience, actually. There are a lot of people that have got new jobs at the start of the year. We've seen all of these notifications and what have you. I'd be very interested to know, like, where would you put HR tech purchasing or technology refresh as part of your priority list this year? Is this something that you are keen to do? I'd be interested to know. Let me know in the comments. Okay, let's move to... go on.
Can I just quickly respond to Mervyn's point about the amount of people who go out and buy shiny new things rather than look at actually what's the problem I really need to solve? And I think there's got to be a balance between cutting out process, which is what it should be for, is to try and make processes better, but maintaining a good human experience. And you can go far too far with that and cut out process and make it a technology solution, but people either don't know what to do or they've suddenly lost the benefit of being part of that organization.
Yeah. I mean, I've done two interviews this morning for a project, which I won't talk about at the moment, but both of the people who are heads of TA I've spoken to have both referred to tech that they were using, but then stopped using because although they'd acquired it, it wasn't doing what they now wanted them to do. And so they'd replaced it. And so my concern with all of the money, all of the dialogue, the whole awash, the sector, is that people will just be buying it because people need to sell it. So people will buy it. But you know, is it going to be, that's that new thing I need. And guess what? Next year, nobody's talking about that anymore. It's not doing what it needs. The hiring needs of this business are completely different. And I bought that because it's kind of, I suppose, interview quality as opposed to something else. But now I need this.
Can you buy and retire
guys,
technology?
We're going to have to move the conversation on. So let's talk about the sectors or the categories in work tech that are most exciting for you in 2022. Where do you see it? Madeline, let's go to you on this.
I mean, TA tech, that's where it's always, you know, what I'm most interested in. But I think we're seeing the most innovation. I think we're seeing the most providers. We're seeing the most excitement, the most investment. So I think TA tech is number one for me within kind of the work tech category.
Can you break it down even further for us, Madeline? Beyond, sort of within TA tech itself, like what kind of subcategories in there do you think are most exciting?
Yeah, I think anything recruitment marketing, and that's a huge umbrella, but I think recruitment marketing continues to be kind of the hot topic where people are spending money and where we're seeing a lot of innovation. Programmatic, I think we're going to see a big increase in companies understanding programmatic and spending money in programmatic. I know Steven's here and we've had lots of conversations on that. And, you know, I think hiring, I think we've sort of ignored this whole area of hiring. Like the ATS doesn't do a good job of everything from the first interview to onboarding. We have to think about the technology solutions. You know, there's companies that have been doing it for a long time, HireVue, Modern Hire, TalView, Predictive Hire. You know, we have to think about better technology to support everything from interview to onboarding.
Excellent stuff. How about you, George? What are your thoughts on like subcategories in those sectors? Where would you think this would be an exciting year in 2022?
Well, for this audience being very largely recruiting centric, I think a lot of the you know, Madeline's hit on a couple things around. I think recruitment marketing is going to and expand that into things like programmatic and any sources of talent, anything that's helping you find and engage talent, because the market is just so difficult. And that's we can all see that. I think with the continued economic situation, you know, the economy being very good, spending increasing, but the talent not being out there, we're going to see even more shifts into freelance and models like that. And I believe, you know, you've got some players in Europe like Job and Talent, where these are more marketplaces that are providing talent on demand. That's in more of a high volume environment. I think we're going to see more of that in the professional ranks, where you're looking at if you could really take an RPO or take a staffing firm into an online presence with on-demand talent for more contract and gig work, because the other thing we have is uncertainty. So what do we do when we're uncertain? You know, we want to hire a bunch of people. They're not available. We're going to bring them in on freelance or contract, maybe try to convert them. But we're going to see a lot of that and a ton of automation. I would watch for, you know, the CFO survey Deloitte just did. They're expecting so much automation in their business. And that's not going to be any different. You know, 14,000 recruiter jobs already posted this year. That's the stat that's bouncing around. So we don't have people to manage the process. So the machines are going to take care of all of that administrativa. So look for like Paradox and companies like that to do exceedingly well, where they can take over that spectrum of automation.
Yeah, so I would make a specific prediction to say that by the end of 2022, every single recruiting company will have some sort of automated scheduling software for booking in Zoom calls. If you're still chasing around, I mean, I would say 50% of the organizations at least are still chasing people around on email to try and nail down times and all the rest of it. That will be a bot by the end of this year. It will be a bot that will sort out the damn thing. We don't have the people. Like, part of the problem, the hiring crisis for recruiters, it puts so much additional stress on the recruiters that you do have. They can't be spending time doing admin and coordination and scheduling. That's ridiculous. That's total waste of their time. So let's move on to that. Hyper-specific predictions. Let's go with you, Merv. Have you got a prediction for us that you can really nail down hyper-specifically? No cliches, please.
No cliches. Sorry, does that mean I'm talking in cliches? No. I mapped out a talent management cycle, but I think you don't want me to run through all of that. Talent intelligence. I think it's going to be increasingly important. I think that, and I know that's a very broad spectrum, but from the stuff I'm doing at the moment, it's really understanding what you have, you know, the adjacent skills, what is in the business. Because at the moment, there's this mad rush to hire. We're losing people we need to hire. But I think without the understanding, talent mobility, I would have said, but I suppose that's really been over the last year, although I think there's a lot more investment. I was going to talk about onboarding, but John Rose has raised that point about onboarding tech, particularly with, you know, hybrid remote contractor, the freelance marketplace as well. But all of these effectively, I think, need to link in. It's all part of the same thing. It's understanding the skills, the capabilities, the capacity you have and managing it.
And all of that should actually improve the candidate and employee experience as well. I think those are the pain points that have probably been ignored over time because we've got away with it by being able to plug it with an external hire. When those external hires are not available, we have to pay attention to those holes that we had in our business in the first place. Okay, we've got to move on. So I want to leave it with at that with two more questions for Madeline and George. Let's give some hyper-specific predictions for 2022. Name names, give dates, give us something that you can say, you know what, this is definitely going to happen. I'm putting my hat in it. Let's go with you first, Madeline.
I think Candidate ID is opening a Boston office this year.
Okay.
No,
that's what I want to see. Yeah.
I think that we're going to see another IPO announced in the ATS market. That's what I think. I think we'll, you know, hopefully see iSIMS be able to, you know, continue this IPO path. And then I think we're going to see another ATS take that route as well.
Yeah, fantastic. How about you, George? Give us a hyper-specific prediction, man.
Okay, I'll say that, and I mean with the greatest respect, I will
say someone's going to get offended whenever anybody leads.
Not on this call, not on this thing. I would say this year is probably the beginning of the end of the reign of Workday. And we've got from all angles, from a talent perspective, from an HR perspective, you look at what's happening with automation, you look at what's happening with data. I think HR is starting to shift to a new interface, to Mervyn's point, for their employees, for their candidates. And I think that this is not what you're not going to see. I'm not saying Workday is going away, but I'm saying we will start to see the new leaders emerge, and the big question will be, can Workday buy them fast enough to take them off the table?
That's a really great prediction. Okay.
On October the 23rd.
Right. Well, which is the day after I predict you will once again shave the whole beard and mustache thing. Yeah.
That's like bizarrely specific by Adam on there. I need to do some research on what exactly is happening globally at that time. But okay, listen, we've got to let you go because we've got other guests to go to come on and we're running short of time. So I want to thank you for coming on the show. Madeline, great to see you. Thank you for getting up early to join us. I really appreciate it. We'll definitely bring you back if you've enjoyed your time with us so far. George, great to see you as well. I know you had to shift things around to get onto the show, so I appreciate your time here. Great to see you. And Merv, always a pleasure, man. Let's get together. Let's talk some football, man.
Definitely. Thank you.
Look out for Merv's book.
Great. Wasn't that fascinating? I mean, they're like some of the most smartest people, I think, on in this space. And I think they've made some amazing points. HR tech is super important. I think there will be huge amounts of consolidation. What is exciting to me, we didn't talk about it, Probably less sexy in that general scheme of things is all that back office tech that was raised, that raised billions last year. Remote.com, Deel, Oyster HR, those types of companies, they're basically unlocking the ability for companies to hire people from anywhere. That is going to be a huge game changer. I want to see where those companies progress. They should be moving back to front in terms of their movement on the stack. Right now, they're back office, but they'll move closer to the front. Given their must-have status, like you, they get to the point that you have to have one of these products. Okay, you've bought it; it costs you a fortune. They'll end up starting putting features and modules that move into the spaces currently occupied by ATSs and the rest. Okay. By the way, folks, if you've got any questions for our guests, please ask the question section at the bottom. Another thing I need to talk about. We always do this in the middle of the show, but don't let Brain Food Live basically be the bottleneck for the conversation. People who are watching this show now care about recruiting, care about the topic. No reason why you shouldn't connect with each other and extend the conversation off platform afterwards. So take a moment, share your LinkedIn URL in the chat stream now, whatever stream you're on, whether it's Crowdcast, Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, share it there and make sure you connect with everyone else you see. That gives you the opportunity basically to expand your network with people that care about the same topics as you. Don't let Brain Food Live stop you from having these conversations. So go ahead and connect with those folks there. Okay, we're going to move on and bring in a few of our other guests. It's Neil Carberry. He's been very patient. Let's bring him on. And Sue Marks, of course. She is. Cool. There he is. There's Neil Carberry. Good to see you, sir.
Hi, guys.
I love the fact Neil always dresses down when it comes to Brain Food Live. Like, this guy was, like, obviously in shirt and tie when he was meeting the cabinet office earlier this week. And look at the state of him now, you know?
I just can't compete with the quality knitwear that Adam's rocking today.
It's no respect. Anyway, and there's Sue as well. Wonderful to see you, Sue. Thanks for getting up so
early. Hello, everybody.
To join us. Great. Hi, to
it
see
is
you.
Not early.
I always get horrifyingly kind of worried whenever I speak to folks that outside of my time zone. So am I pulling them out of bed too early? So I just want to make sure. Okay, so let's introduce ourselves real quick. Neil, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Yeah, Neil Carberry, Chief Executive of the Recruitment and Employment Confederation, which is the UK's recruitment industry body. I'm also Director of the World Employment Confederation, which is the club of all of us around the world.
And normally seen on Sky News.
Often seen on Sky News, and actually in the workplace today, because the only thing that is more important than applying with the work from home order is complying with GDPR. And I've got a suitcase full of stuff that's built up on my home desk over the last 2 years opposite me on the in the office here, and it's going in the REC shredding bin after this.
And it's obviously dressed down Friday at REC headquarters.
It's defined dressed up, frankly.
It is the new REC. There you go. And Sue, for the folks who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, and what it is you do?
Well, first, I'm going to give you my Twitter bio, which is CEO, serial entrepreneur, board member, Broadway producer, crypto enthusiast, angel investor, insomniac, workaholic. Yes, insomniac. We talked about sleep earlier. I'm CEO and founder of Cielo, and we are a global RPO firm, and really pleased that we've got a team that has created very high rankings from customers and analysts alike. So thanks to all of our team members around the world. And for those of you in the UK, I'm currently involved in both Moulin Rouge and the Tour of Rock of Ages. So when you can put your mask on and go back to the theater, go see some live theater.
What do you mean by this, Sue? You're involved? Are you on stage? What's going on?
No. I am. Co-producer. So you know, I'm this crazy entrepreneur, but my passion is entrepreneurship, but I love live theater. So I started investing in co-producing a few years ago.
That's amazing. Yes. Like we can think of all kinds of promotions that we could run. That would
yes, like, and I can get you house seats anytime you guys need house seats. So
boom, there we go. Boom. We're gonna get up cultured with Sue Marks. I love it. Yep. Yep. Okay, let's get on with the topic at hand, folks. Let's talk about sort of 2022. Where you think the world is going? We know that last year was really, really a crazy time for recruiting. And in a positive way, we had huge demand for recruiting services. Certain sectors, obviously, were massively hammered. I think the service suppliers that were supplying to those sectors obviously suffered as well. But overall scope of the recruitment market, nobody could recruit. That's usually good news for recruiters, isn't it? Is that going to extend into 2022, or are we going to see some sort of rebalancing of the labor market? Thoughts on this? Sue, let's go to you first on this question.
It will continue in 2022 because it will take a long time for the for us to realize we're in an endemic and to get used to the rise and fall of different variants of this virus. The U.S. unemployment numbers just came out half an hour ago or so. They were disappointing. I think they did not take into account the issues with the Omicron variant. I think January's numbers will probably disappoint as well. The good news is October, November numbers were raised 102,000 jobs. So I think we're going to continue to see this war for talent over the course of most of 2022.
What sectors, Sue? Because I know that Cielo obviously have a very expansive view. Part of the reason why you and Neil, I wanted you both on together because you have this like really high level of view of how the landscape looks. What's the sectoral differences do you spot in your business?
None. It is everywhere. Really? It is everywhere.
Right.
There are pockets of really great brands that have really great people, process, and underlying technology that have less of an issue. But there is not a single executive that today will say, "Oh, we don't have any talent problems. We can attract all the talent we want." Everyone says there's a shortage.
Very, very interesting. How about your view of it, Neil? I've been following your Twitter. About it. The REC Twitter is really good, by the way, for producing some of this like fairly up-to-date information. I think it's a really good account, so you should follow that. So I'm pretty well versed on it. But Neil, I wonder whether you could describe your position as you see it from, I guess, the UK staffing perspective. Do you see this war for talent continuing and why? And if so, when is it going to abate? Thoughts on this?
Yeah, so my sort of non-cliched view for for this afternoon is probably that 2022 is more uncertain than 2021, because what we're moving away from is this one size fits all. We're all navigating the pandemic together world into beginning to see the winners and losers within sectors and between sectors emerge. So like Sue said, if you look at our data, everyone was down in 2020, everyone's up in 2021. But clearly, high street retail is up a lot less at the moment than cybersecurity is. Healthcare is still well ahead. Social care is still well ahead. A lot of those areas where we know we're going to have big demand. It's actually quite difficult. People are experiencing difficulty with candidates at the moment and salary expectations because they're seeing wages are going up everywhere. And roughly, starting wages are going up in both permanent and for temporary roles at the moment, but they're not going up the same amount everywhere. And so there's a lot of kind of expectation management, pathfinding about this new world, companies in very different positions. And I think we picked up a bit, George and Madeline earlier were talking about devaluable capital in some of the tech companies who've raised a lot of cash and what they've got isn't worth what they've raised. We haven't adapted yet to the fact that loads of client companies are carrying devaluable capital. So my view this
all
year
right. is inflation. Neil, dumb it down for me, man. I mean, I can usually deal with one term I don't understand, but when you conjugate them, I struggle. So devaluated capital. Can you like
they bought a lot of stuff that isn't worth what they say it's worth.
Right.
And essentially, my core view is inflation is a bigger problem than we've let on to ourselves. That pressure will build on client companies through the year. And growth in the second half of the year for recruiters is not going to come from meeting recovery as firms turn on everything they turned off again. It's going to come on from helping companies carry out radical restructurings. And I think in the UK, I suspect in the United States, in lots of markets, we're going to see a lot of corporate restructuring and movement of skill and talent into new and growing areas in the second half of the year. So the secret sauce for the recruiters who are doing it right this year is to find those clients and get close to them.
Explain to the audience why inflation is a problem, Neil, because, you know, we hear a few reports on the newspapers, but I think you're right. It's sort of underplayed. Why are you ringing the alarm bells on this issue? And what is the, I guess, street level impact for a recruiter working in a recruitment business?
So I'll give you a UK specific story, right? In recruitment in the UK, we like inflation because we take our margin and, you know, if starting rates for perm jobs goes up, we get a bit more. Temp rates go up, we get a bit more. But obviously, you can't keep raising new starter salaries without moving settlements for your existing staff. So companies are going to start feeling the pressure to go from 2-2.5% per year, which has been about the average for the last few years in the UK, to 3.5-4%, even 5% and more. So that's going on to your costs. Look at the global commodities markets. Your other on costs are going up as well. You've got the UK government, certainly, and other jurisdictions are in different spaces, but the UK government's putting business tax up, not down at this moment. At the end of the day, you have to make some decisions about what you can afford. And I think that will drive some big automation discussions, like we're hearing from the other guys earlier. And it will drive some big discussions about, well, where do we find the headroom in our existing operations to do the investment in digital that we know we need to do? And that's not just capital, it's the people as well. So I think the theme of growth for recruiters in the second half of this year is getting close to those clients as they restructure, understanding their new business plan and resourcing against that, not just expecting to turn the dial back up on what we had before.
Because those plans will start to hit the 2023 budgets.
Yeah.
So that will start to happen in late Q3 and Q4 of 2022, given that most companies are on a calendar year, fiscal year.
Yep. Does this mean that middle management basically are screwed? Because when you're saying, hey, we've got to get the cost down out of the business, we've got to implement technology, most expensive people in the business are that middle management tier, that the most sort of expensive plus potentially disposable is that group. Whereas early entry, young operator, individual contributor, you can still say, you know what, the in and out of the cash flow of this particular person is justifying their own seat, but the person who's doing the management, can we afford to lose this person? Do you see middle management being like properly wiped out? Thoughts on this, Sue?
No. Well, yes, if they're no good, and then and they should be fired regardless. But middle managers are the greatest accelerators or blockers in any organization. So we need to make, so as a middle manager, I would make sure I was effectively looking at how I can run my department better and add more value to customers, which is going to make me important to the organization. And I'd be looking at those things and bringing those ideas to my management. So it's a yes and no answer to that question.
What about your thoughts, Neil?
The silver lining of this is we're not long on people in the Western world. We've got a massive demographic problem. I mean, I ended up having a very involved discussion in the discussions last time I was on about whether the Great Retirement is a purely American, resignation is purely American thing, or whether we're seeing it in the UK. And we, you know, resignation rates in the UK are up a bit, but they're not up a lot yet. What I think is absolutely a big issue in every country is the Great Retirement, where older workers have taken this opportunity just to go, I'm off. And every generation after the baby boomers is smaller than the one before. So going to Sue's point, I don't think if you're a middle manager in your 40s, it's the end of the road if you're any good, because there's lots that you could do. What I do think is you should be thinking about, well, what's the run I've got on what I'm doing now versus what I might need to do.
I apologize to all middle managers, by the way, for casting an apocalyptic sort of framing of that point. You're all good, to Sue and then Neil. So this is like super interesting. What do you think is the, if I was a middle manager now, for instance, what is the best thing I can do to future-proof my own sort of position and even maximize, you know, the current conditions for my own sort of good? Is it a good time to quit and try and find another job? I mean, is it, should I like really exploit this? What are your thoughts on this? Open to anybody, including you, Adam. Thoughts?
I think it's getting close to the business plan. You know, understand, find where, and I think this is true for HR and TA professionals as well, which is find where in the business the future commercial model is being thought about and think about what the implications of that are. I mean, if you look at our industry survey for the UK that came out just before Christmas, that's the biggest single response we get from UK recruitment firms about what's our coping strategy. It's get closer to clients, understand their commercial thinking. Try and understand the direction of travel. And the challenge with this, and it goes to your point earlier, Hung, about advising people to do coding, is that we can't predict 5 years or 10 years ahead with mass accuracy. But what we can do is kind of know the channels in which, if we do a bit of investment, we're probably improving our employability.
Yeah, I'd say everybody should think like an entrepreneur. And so if you're in a large organization, that would be called an intrapreneur. And that means scanning the competitive environment for your business. And are you working for a business that's competitive in products, services? Is the leadership team forward-looking, financially well-equipped to be able to move into the future? If not, there's lots of opportunities right now. But think like an entrepreneur, and you will always be looking at what the customer wants today and helping the customer understand what they need tomorrow and making sure that your products and services fit what that customer looks at. And that will make you more valuable to the organization. But make sure the organization that you're working for is worthy of your efforts.
Yeah. So to back up Sue's point. Sorry, go on, Sue.
I think we have an obligation to be worthy of our employees' considerable efforts that they put on behalf of our organizations. And if you're working for a company that's not, it's a good time to switch.
To back up Sue's point about thinking like an entrepreneur, there are less and less jobs where you're doing repetitive tasks and you're doing the same thing every day. And, you know, so you need to be able to adapt quickly and take on new things and innovate. And so, you know, the days of like monitoring reports and monitoring KPIs every day and doing that, and that's all you're doing as a middle manager, that's not something for the future.
That's actually a very good
point. Automation is going to do that.
Yeah.
Automation is going to do that.
Yeah. So there's actually a really good measure for your own health of your job is the how much repetition you're doing, isn't it? Because if you find yourself, you're just ticking and bashing for 2 hours a day every day, guess what? The chances are that's going to be a bit of software that's going to get rid of that piece of your job. So that is something you do a lot of. You need to rethink, like, how do I personally get rid of it so that I can then build other things that is irreplaceable? I think that's something everyone needs to be thinking about.
Our mutual friend Rob McCargo, Hung, says the robots aren't here to steal your jobs. They're just here to take away the boring bits of it. But of course, the corollary of that is you better make sure that the boring bits of it aren't the bits that you make your USP.
Yeah, and being efficient at the boring bits, unfortunately, is a big chunk of a recruiter's job, or has been historically. You know, being hyper efficient at organizing interviews, doing this, that, and the other, all those types of things, that can give you a competitive advantage in an agency environment per se, simply because you could do more than a person who was less organized. But technology might actually be a big equalizer in that space. So I don't think you can really rely on being a hyper-efficient individual, because nothing is going to be more efficient than an AI, than a robot, essentially. Okay, let's focus on the recruiting space, particularly this RPO space. I've got a theory that the big shift to remote is going to open the door for agencies to just pile in to the RPO world. Because I think the differences between an RPO and an agency, or embedded recruiter and an agency, have kind of blurred a huge amount, given the fact no one is physically embedded anymore. Like you used to be able to give a big differentiator by saying, you know what, forget agencies, we're going to put a recruiter on site at your company, they're going to be your in-house person. Well, guess what? That person is doing that, but really virtually anyway. Doesn't that open the door for a massive entry of traditional third-party recruiters into kind of boutique RPO space? Thoughts on this? Adam, do you want to say something?
As somebody totally independent in the answer to that question, I'd like to answer first. And the answer is no, absolutely not. From my perspective, the massive advantage that a good RPO business has is its central recruitment marketing and employer branding teams, its central tech teams, its central sourcing teams. It's all of those centers of excellence that individual recruiters and team managers can call upon to make their performance much better. A recruitment agency is very unlikely to have anything like that at their disposal. So I don't believe that. However, that's not to say that for the SME, the fast growth type organizations who might want embedded people, whether it's on site or it's remote, they might want a fast paced type of solution that's somewhere like a hybrid, almost like a joint talent type thing. But I don't believe that it opens the doors for recruitment agencies to all of a sudden move into the mainstream RPO space.
That's a very compelling rebuttal, Adam. Let's hear from absolutely. I feel as if I've been proved wrong. But let's hear from Sue and Neil. A thought on this, Sue, in your space as well. You know, being a market leader in providing these innovative staffing solutions, what do you see the shift to remote? How do you see the impacting of that on the landscape?
I think the shift to remote makes it easier for all organizations to access great talent. Then the problem is engaging them and making sure they feel like a member of your team, as well as the client team that you've got them deployed on, right? So I view this as an opportunity. And it depends on your definition of RPO. If your definition of RPO includes, well, I'm sending five roles out to this recruiter, that's not our definition of RPO. Our definition of RPO is a business process outsourcing kind of definition. And an RPO is art and science. I mean, it is not transactional, solely transactional, like payroll or benefits outsourcing. There is a huge amount of art and sales and marketing that needs to go into real operational excellence and technology enablement. So the eight figures that we put into technology enablement and training every year, you know, generally can't be matched by smaller organizations or by individual organizations. So that is one of the benefits of having an RPO partner to use.
Fantastic. Thoughts on this, Neil?
So I agree with lots of that. One headwind of this, of course, is, you know, a lot of RPO hasn't gone remote, because if you look at things like the food supply chain, which in the UK has heavy RPO usage, it's all been in person throughout. And we need to remember that certainly in the UK, and I think in most jurisdictions, most people still went to work every day during the pandemic because they couldn't work from home. So that's a bit of a break on this. I do think there's a drive to RPO, and certainly in bigger firms, driven by the tightness of labour markets and the candidate shortages that we're seeing, that will boost the model. And I'm a bit less of a sceptic than Adam on the ability of agencies to move into RPO. One, I think people will look at what investments they can to move in that direction. But there might be the development of a kind of RPO-light model. If you're servicing a medium-sized company that wants some of the benefits of our RPO, and you're an agency who can deliver some of the benefits of RPO, I think that might be where we see the kind of entrepreneurialism that you were talking about, Hung.
Yeah,
Your sponsor, Joint Talent, is from, and I don't know them well, but from what I understand, is a really good example of a high quality boutique, fast growing firm.
Adam, you about to say something?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, in response to Neil's point, I really do believe that staffing agencies have got big opportunities because of the amount of disruption in the market there is. They've got big opportunities to adapt their models and innovate. And, you know, things that have worked from the past may not work from the future, but there's other things they will be able to do without necessarily going towards an RPO route. But something else that's equally as important about RPO is, it's not just staffing agencies who will find it difficult to create the same amount of innovation because of what Sue said, the 10, eight-figure investments into technology and things like that. it's actually the in-house talent acquisition teams that will find it very, very difficult to keep pace with them as well. Unless you're Amazon or IBM or somebody with like 300, 400, 500 sort of strong TA team, you're never going to have the same capability that a company, you know, a really strong RPO has around all of those specialist areas of recruitment that I mentioned a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I think a really good point. Maybe the people most vulnerable might be the internal teams that, you know, are struggling, obviously, finding candidates. They can't recruit more recruiters either, so that they're not getting resources to help them do that work. Maybe they don't have the budget size either to compete or to buy some of the, you know, talent intelligence type software or, you know, those types of things that can really unlock the door in some cases. It may be tough times. I want to talk about, sort of just conscious of time here, folks, but I want to talk about the recruiting crisis we have into the industry. So every agency, every company is saying we can't recruit recruiters. Why is that the case? Is it so difficult to make recruiters? And do you see this hiring crisis for recruiters leading to us internationalizing where we source the people from? In other words, okay, we can't hire the person based in Texas or London or whatever. Why doesn't this person actually, you know, could be getting from Panama or maybe let's go to Mozambique, somewhere like that. Do you see that happening? So pushing the job out rather than trying to pull the people in. Thoughts on this? Go to you, Sue, on this first.
Yes and yes and yes. So it is hard for us to find enough recruiters, and experienced recruiter salaries are escalating. And yes, then it creates internal compression issues. When we were talking about inflation, I can't remember who brought that up. So we're finding that to be a huge challenge. And we always run our own internal recruit U, our own recruiting university. And we're making a significant investment this year in expanding that so that we can, you know, multiply by five or six times the number of graduates that come out of that particular institute. I do think that we'll be able to use recruiters. We currently use recruiters all around the world. We've got recruiting centers in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Budapest, Manchester, Manila, Buenos Aires. They're not necessarily in Manchester is lower cost than central London, I guess, right? Milwaukee is lower cost than New York. So I think we look for good talent wherever we can find it. What I think is really critical is in this next couple of years, we really should see boards of directors, CEOs, and the rest of the C-level team really expect more from HR and from talent acquisition and start to resource HR and talent acquisition in the way it should have always been resourced. Because now it is hitting home in financial results that we are missing X hundred millions of dollars on our top line and our bottom line because we have not been able to staff our organizations. So it is becoming real. So I look forward to that bar being raised and most of our profession being able to really rise to that new bar and getting the resources they need to do it. So I think it's an exciting time for whether you're in an external agency, an RPO, or in internal recruiting. I think it's an exciting and challenging time to be here.
Yeah, boom times. Thoughts on the question there, Neil, in terms of, okay, how do we get new people into the industry?
Well, Sue talked earlier about cultural literacy, and I think that is the one break on internationalization. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's relatively easy for someone in Milwaukee to talk to someone in New York and relatively easy for someone in Manchester to talk to someone in Newcastle, as long as they don't talk about the football. But there's I think there's a bit of a break beyond that because it's an art and a science, as Sue was saying earlier. I think two things. One, we've got to get better at developing the people we have in the industry and holding on to them. We have come a long way from the days of put someone on a desk and see if they make a load of money. And if they don't make a load of money, chuck them out. But we probably haven't come far enough from it. If anyone wants a recommendation of a really great half-hour talk to watch, watch Simon Sinek's Leaders Don't Know What Game They're In chat from about 2016 on the Live to Lead feed. It's a really great chat about how you lead this generation of people coming through. I do think this is probably my specific prediction that early talent is going to be white hot across the industry and all of our clients over the next few years. So keep the people we have, manage them better, develop them better, and then it's about the brand that we give being a recruiter. And a lot of what we're trying to do at the REC, and I know Richard Valquist at the ASA is trying to do the same, and other bodies, it's about walking with our heads held high. This is a professional service. Right. It's not about filling seats. It's about solving business problems, about helping businesses to grow and opening up opportunities. I do think D&I mainstreams. So I think there's something in how we talk about the industry and we market the industry that's going to be really important as well.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Sue, final word to you. Give us a kind of a specific prediction for 2022 in recruiting. I mean, do you see, like, was one thing that you think, okay, this is probably going to happen? Yeah, and maybe, you know, it's not a conventional mainstream view.
Well, I've got two for you because I thought about this early this morning. The first one is really TA specific. Someone is going to replace a TA lead with a chief marketing officer. And the whole team is going to be turned into a sales and marketing team, right? Or the TA team is going to be moved to report to marketing instead of HR. So I would say let's look for some reasonably sized to large organization moving TA away from HR and into marketing.
Right. Super interesting. I love it. Where is that case study? Will there be a company brave enough to drop in a CMO as top of the TA function and saying, look, we're just going to do it this way. Yeah. Really, really great. Adam,
Can I just ask Sue, is that that's your prediction, is that that's going to happen? Is that something that you think is a good idea, or you're not saying that?
I think that recruiting is a sales and marketing job.
I agree.
I don't think it's an HR job.
Nope.
So I'm not making a statement about it shouldn't report to HR or whatever, but I think it needs to be run like a sales and marketing organization is run. And it has become highly search engine optimization and AI dependent in terms of talent attraction in order to maximize use of recruitment marketing dollars and not spend tens of millions of wasted dollars. So there is so much more there that HR, the TA can learn from marketing. So that's why I see them really coming together in most organizations and maybe flipping in a couple. Then my second one is around Web3. I see Web3 really gaining some traction. And I think there will be a media company, maybe it's Axios here in the US or the Recount, one of these new media companies will create their own token and decentralized autonomous organization, and they will be owned instead of subscribed to. So instead of buying a subscription for $100 a year, you will buy an NFT and become an owner of that media company for that $100. So we will see some really unique experimentation in Web3.
Do you know what, Sue? I think if people have actually approached me to say, Hung, why doesn't Recruitment Brain Food do a DAO? I said, look, man, I'm a Web2 guy, you know. it's like, don't
get
me wrong.
You got a couple of Web3 guys on here, though. You got a couple
of Web3
guys.
I do, and they're good friends of mine as well. Yeah. And in fact, I've invested in them, I believe. So I'm a believer, but I just wonder whether the way in which Brain Food operates is currently very much tied to solving Web2 problems. So is it really the most suited thing for Web3? Who knows? Maybe there'll be a tokenization coming out of Brain Food at some point. Would you like to see it? Would you buy in? There's the question, folks.
Well, the real question is, when is Hung Coin coming?
Hung Coin, I love it. Oh my goodness, it'd be a rocket ship, folks. It'd be a rocket ship. Okay, that's about it. We've finished the show. Actually, no, we've got questions. Let's just quickly pile through the questions. Sue and Neil, I hope you're going to hang around and help us answer these. We're going to go through one by one. Let's do the first one. This is from Sonal Duby. She's saying, what new skills badges do recruiters need to tackle in 2022? Okay, I'm not sure about whether we need like the badge per se, but what skills do you think is like really important for us to learn this year and get a foundation on? Let's go, Neil, on you for this.
It's all about the added value conversation, how you manage them, how you handle them, your skills in coaching candidates, your skills in talking to clients, because that's the stuff that the AI isn't going to steal from you.
Right, that's it. It's basically all the soft skills that cannot be automated. Got to triple, double and triple down on that. Okay, next question. Andrew Judson, what is your opinion of external referrals versus internal employee referrals? Is there a reason why this isn't more prevalent already? So I'm thinking this is about expanding the referral idea beyond the boundaries of the business. Sue, you have an opinion on this?
Internal bureaucracy is probably what it is. You know, we give an internal, usually 300, 3,000, 5,000, whatever, we give a referral fee. How could we give that to an external person or vendors? It's probably internal bureaucracy, but we should do it.
You know what? There's also like a mechanism, like is how do you pay the person as well, right? I mean, that person typically needs an entity in order for them
Hung
to be given that.
Hungcoin.
Maybe the Hungcoin solution. There we go. All of it's starting to connect together.
One of my customers uses both their alumni and their candidates as sources of referral. But the only challenge they had with doing it was working out how do they get them paid. So it was what Sue said. It's to do with how do you get them paid.
Is there a solution for that? Like, can someone like literally magic something up? That seems to me maybe something that would unlock the idea of having an external referral marketplace.
They've got them signed up. They've got them signed up effectively as subcontractors. So if you sign up for this company, I think it's Freedom Mortgage. If you sign up as a referrer, you just sign up to a kind of contract agreement, and then you can start just putting people into and like a referral portal.
Right, that's it. That's the brain food's next project. Right, no, seriously, no. Well, next question. Where is the limit between internal and external recruiting practices? What hiring practices are impertinent or inappropriate for recruitment to be made by internal HR employees? So I think this is referring to, okay, at what point does the scope stop for an internal recruiter when it comes to internal external recruiting? So in other words, are they involved in talent mobility? I think that's the question, isn't it?
Harassment's when it should stop.
If I'm with the plastics division and I know somebody in the electronics division that I want to hire, can I actually go recruit another GM's people? That's always been a thorny problem, and different companies have different policies.
And absolutely, we've seen some really interesting examples of how companies have tried to solve that. And I think one of the predictions I've got this year is that there'll be an extraordinary example from a, you know, big FTSE 100, a huge company that will have a radical idea in terms of just liquefying their business and saying, look, everyone is able to go, you can recruit this way. They're going to basically be far less structured in order to unlock this internal
candidates
mobility.
I think candidates will demand that, right? And I think that could be interesting in terms of the employer value proposition.
But this is where it's about the leadership in the line taking workforce planning seriously. Because if you believe that people are your biggest asset, as many chief execs tell us, then behave that way. Give it some time. I think there's two options here. You either think about your internal labor market, your workforce planning, and what you bring in externally, what you buy, what you borrow, what you grow, and do it explicitly and consciously, or it's forced upon you. And I think that'll be a big difference maker between clients.
Yeah.
Regardless of that, everybody still smiles when you hear the case of the recruitment agency that's made a fee from placing somebody from one team in a business into a different division of the same business.
Yeah.
It's just inefficiency everywhere.
It is. And it's something that's hard to unlock. I think the only way to unlock it is to get rid of line managers. They should not have the hiring responsibility. They should just simply be coaches to teams and performance coaches, if you like, and having it like a centralized talent acquisition function. I think that's the only way in which you can unlock this. Okay, Sue, so this is for you.
Everyone reports to the machine. That's the only way to.
Indeed. Oh, they reported. Actually, this is a question that is Web3. So, Sue, you're handling this one. Developer exodus from FANG to Web3 as a trend. Do you see this as an ongoing thing? There is a conversation in the tech world to say, you know what, all the talent is going towards these Web3 startups, including leaving these big, you know, previously elite tech hirers. Do you see this as an ongoing trend, and how significant is it going to be?
Well, crypto will continue the crazy valuations in 2022, where some other industries, and I'm not saying it's HR tech, will moderate. I think that there will be in the areas that moderate, we'll see more M&A because there is this huge promise of these companies that now have billion-dollar valuations, and will they actually be able to meet that promise? And if not, they'll have to merge. Crypto, probably biotech as well. There are two or three sectors that are projected by the banks, big and small, to still maintain these crazy levels of funding. Crypto is one of them.
Yeah. It's going to be a really exciting time. And by the way, we're going to do more Web3 stuff going on Bravefruit Lab. We need to explore this and really educate the TA community as what it's all about. I've actually got an interview on Founders Focus with Pedro Oliveira, the Excellent. CEO of Talent Protocol. He's coming on and we're going to have a chat on February. So tune into that if you want to learn about what this means as it applies to HR and TA. So that should be super interesting. Okay, we're well over time, folks. So we've got to leave it at this point. Adam, a final word to you.
Not one person used the word metaverse.
Oh, very interesting indeed. Leave it at that. Is it a big deal? Who knows? I have an Oculus. Where is it? Here it is. I actually have it right here and I might well, you know, give it a shot at one point in a Brain Food Live. Who knows? But it is a tough thing to try and get to. I think we're still at game stage with the metaverse at this point. But we'll see. Anybody has a different opinion, please let me know. Maybe it's worthwhile doing a Brain Food Live in it. We're going to have to say goodbye to Sue Marks and to Neil Carberry. Sue, great to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. Neil, great to see you as well. We'll catch up soon, hopefully in town. So have a good weekend, you two.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Wasn't that great? Okay, everybody, that's about it. Thank you so much for joining us. We had a 90-minute show because this is always going to be a very long one. I hope you got something from our predictions. I hope you also understand that we only had a very narrow window as the things we want to talk about. Loads of things we weren't able to cover. We didn't have the chance to really talk about DE&I. We didn't have a chance to talk about vaccine mandates. We didn't have a chance to talk about really the remote. Is hybrid hype going to go away? Lots of things that we need to talk about. But all of that is going to be locked and loaded for Brain Food Live rest of this year. So if you've enjoyed this show, make sure you join the channel, follow the channel, and then you'll be updated on every future show we're going to have. Okay, that's about it. Have a good weekend, everybody. See you later. That was pretty good, huh? I thought.
Loved that.
Smart people.
It's probably 3 out of 4 shows now that I just really loved them. I was off to a bang with the, you know, tremendous sort of guests, stellar cast that you had on today. So well done.
They were stellar. And one of the problems I have with such an amazing panel is that none of them had enough time. So I think each of them need to have like a separate, they should be the special guest really. I think that would be the, we could learn so much from them. So we kind of stuffed all the quality in one go, really.
The traveling Wilburys.
Yeah, it was too much. Exactly right. It was like the super band. It was a super group. But I tell you what, we've got another great show next week. Adam, you're replaced as co-host because Maury's doing it.
I saw that. But you can come
on as guest if you want. If you fancy having a chat, come on. We're talking about how to sell TA transformation.
It's not mine.
It's not your thing. All right.
It's my thing. I love it. I'm not the person to talk about it.
Yeah, but Maury's in there. We've also got I think Paul Maxson's joining us for that.
Alan Bailey,
hopefully we can get her on. I think we have to get her up super early to do it. But she's gonna do it. And Ben Gledhill is gonna join us. He's got a new job. So I thought a good time to catch someone who's just joined a new job. Obviously it's not business as usual. He's got to go and make changes. What does he need to know? It's gonna be awesome.
I wonder if Ben's taken his zero cost recruitment toolbox into his new job. I saw him on stage a few years ago and he was talking about employer branding on a budget of £0. This is how you do it. And it was all great stuff. Really great.
Ben's great. I want to see that. I want to see exactly those slides again whenever Ben decides to do another talk. Because I think he decided to come off the conference circuit for some reason. But if he ever comes back.
They're all valid. They're all still totally valid. Use your phone for video. You don't need to spend a load of money on stuff. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. Anyway, listen, what you got planned for the weekend? Anything interesting?
Clearing the garden of snow, clearing snow off the car. it's like snow out there, I'm just going to go to the gym and try and keep losing weight.
How are you doing, mate?
5 pounds down in,
that's pretty good,
6 days.
That's really good.
So it's all right. I've cut my calorie intake to about 2,000. So
what's, I tell you what, you want to eat?
It's not low.
Boiled eggs, mate.
No, I hate them. No chance. Well,
actually, that's your problem. I mean, boiled eggs.
Brazil nuts, maybe.
Boiled eggs fill you up, and they literally have like very low calorific impact in terms of your body weight or whatever. It's all protein. My son
can eat mine. He loves them, but not me.
Right. It's being a picky eater isn't going to help you, man. You know what I mean? So
what was that stuff that that you and I ate together a few months ago?
Did we have a meal, Taylor? How was that even possible? Like, you live in Scotland. When you came down with the kids?
No. When I was down on my own for the Joshua fight.
Oh, we had Chinese food, didn't we?
Tapioca or something, wasn't it?
Oh, we had, it was taro cake. It was like kind of, it's kind of a yam, but it's like mashed and it's fried, right? So,
that was quite nice.
Yeah, really good. It's calorific as though. It's more or less eating a fried potato. So it's not going to help you weight loss.
Yeah, that's not what I was thinking of.
Chinatown's not going to help your food, your weight loss.
The feet are not going to help my weight loss either, because they're like in batter.
It's not food either. It's not going to do it. Anyway, listen, you have a good weekend, man. I'll see you.
Cheers.
I'll hopefully chat to you soon, okay? Take it easy, bye, man.